that you're born an Italian. If you want your life to be great, see that you're born an Italiano and your life will be great.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Italian American Podcast. I'm John Viola, spending the day with my pal Ross Cellarago, and we've got a really interesting topic today, and one that, interestingly enough, I think both Ro and I have some historic foot to stand on. So it's appropriate that we're the two hosts joining everybody today, because we're going to talk about the topic of education. And before my time at the National Italian American Foundation, I spent 4 years as the executive director of a Catholic education reform nonprofit and general director of a Catholic school. And Ro, I know while you are out there teaching the world the culinary treasures of the nonne that you interact with, you do have a background in teaching, correct?
Yeah, I almost became an Italian teacher, almost. Actually, I majored in Italian literature at St. John's University, and I minored in secondary education. So I was gearing up to teach young Brooklynites how to speak Italian. Didn't quite work out, but, you know, I like to think that I still teach. And through the podcast, Pat keeps asking me to speak my regional language of Molese, so pepper in some education when we can.
Yeah, it's interesting to think what life might have been like not that many years ago had you been teaching Italian in Brooklyn and I had been running a Catholic school there. Perhaps we would have met anyway, you know?
Yes, I'd like to think that in the sitcom of my life.
That's absolutely right. The recurring characters always pop up. But no, I mean, this is a very important topic and one that I hold near and dear to me, educational reform and how we integrate education and work on education from a public-private partnership perspective. I think that's really, really important because, you know, we can see now in our own country the changes in education going on between public and private schools, parochial schools. Obviously, this distance learning, remote learning that has come up through the COVID era, if you will, and what it's meant to how people think about what a school is and their participation there, and really how a teacher can utilize their talents across different platforms, be it either remote or in person or with students in all different parts of the world at the same time. So it's an interesting time to think about education and a really important time, obviously, for Italy. We are going to hold off on sharing some of the kind of alarming statistics that have been shared with us as we prepare for this episode around where education in Italy is right now. But it's fair to say that we can use the word crisis when you get to hear these facts and figures that come from our two guests today. But obviously, there's a model in the United States called Teach for America, one that's been very successful over the past decades. And our guests today are behind Teach for Italy, which is a non-governmental organization set up to strengthen public schools in the most underserved communities in Italy and bring young, talented, new energy to the most disadvantaged schools by preparing recent university graduates to come in and dedicate at least 2 years of their lives as teaching fellows, which is similar to the model here we have at Teach for America, but one that I think very important for the future of education in Italy. So I'm very, very happy to welcome our guest today. We have Nick Autiello, who is a board member of the Friends of Teach for Italy, which is the American board here that helps support the initiative. And we have the CEO of Teach for Italy, Andrea Pastorelli. And so, gentlemen, welcome to the Italian American Podcast. We're looking forward to a great conversation today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
And so, guys, first and foremost, I guess the question goes to Andrea. Andrea, have you been at the organization from the very beginning? Are you part of the founding of the organization? I see your background is one of incredible work in the NGO sector. You've worked for the Clinton Foundation. You've worked with the United Nations all over the world. Were you there at the initial concept of this organization, Teach for Italy? And can you tell us about it?
Hi, John, for sure. So yes, I've been there from the very beginning. Actually, I came back to Italy to start Teach for Italy. And I came back to do it because like millions of Italians, I had been one of those expat Italians who have to leave Italy to find a job or to pursue their careers. And so I'd spent many, many years abroad, a lot of them in the US, working for the United Nations in New York. And then with the UN, I moved to Africa in Asia. And I came back to Italy 3 years ago, more or less, to start Teach for Italy, because I came back to Italy every year as every Italian has to do, of course, for Christmas and the summer. And I found an Italy that was poorer, a country that was becoming poorer economically, for sure, and a country that was becoming poorer culturally and socially too. A country that was angry, dissatisfied, and that kind of had lost a little bit of direction in some way. And I thought, I know it sounds cliche, but I thought, there's no way out of this if we don't invest in the education, in the Italian education system. And that's why we started Teach for Italy, bringing, as you said, a model that is already so successful, was already so successful in America, but not only in the US. The model of Teach for America is now in 61 countries globally, achieving incredible impact. And so we decided that we needed to do this in Italy too.
Set the table for us a little bit if you can, because I think for many members of our audience, even those who are Italian-American or Italophiles really engaged with Italy, it's a smaller segment that actually engages the education system, particularly the primary education system, because unless you have kids who are going to an Italian public school, you really aren't engaging what education means in Italy. I think for many of us who are first, second, third generation, we picture Italian schools and the little children in the smocks, and you know, we harken back to a much older time. What's the state of Italian public education today? Can you kind of describe the public education system in Italy in terms of what an educational life looks like for young people?
Well, you were right at the beginning when you called it a crisis. So Italy has been through a really deep educational crisis now for more than 10 years. I'll give you two data sets, not to be too boring. But the first one, I think what really worries us is that Italy has totally transformed itself from a country of opportunity to a country where opportunity is very hard to find. So if you come from a family, an educated family or educated parents in Italy today, you will go to university. While if you come from both parents not having been to university, you probably will not go to university. So out of 100 kids who come from a low-income background in Italy, only 8 will become, you know, university graduates.
I want to highlight that. I feel like Pat, but I want to highlight that for the audience. Yeah. 8 out of 100 kids from low-income backgrounds will enter for a university degree.
8 kids out of 100 who come from both parents who don't have a degree will actually get a degree in Italy, while 65 out of 100 kids who come from both parents having a degree will get a degree. So there's a huge difference in opportunity on who actually gets to continue education.
Wow.
But the other thing that really worries us, and that, of course, is behind this data that I just said, these numbers I just said, is that 30% of our young people under 30 not only drop out of school too early, and that's why, of course, they don't get to graduate, but when they drop out of school because of high unemployment, they don't find a job and they don't train to find a future job. There's a term called NEET, so young people who are not in education, employment, or training. And in most countries, you know, there's 10% of young people are in that situation. In Italy, in some regions, almost 50% of young people are in that situation. So we are wasting a huge chunk of our future generation. And it's, you know, it's a waste that as a country we cannot afford.
So let's talk a little bit about how education in Italy is organized and how it's integrated into employment opportunities. Because from my time in education reform, one of the things that I always found staggering about the U.S. was that compared to other first world countries, we here in the United States in our education system have a deeply neglectful approach to vocational education, right? I know in parts of Scandinavia, there's, I believe it's like a 60-40 split for students who go into the liberal arts and students who pursue a vocation around the university experience. I think that obviously leads to better results when it comes to employment opportunities and to integration into the economy after graduation. What's the Italian system set up like? And is there a similar issue here in the United States around vocational education?
Definitely. There's a real problem. I think the best model in Europe is Germany, actually, where if you go into vocational schooling or vocational track, it's been redesigned in a way that it leads to university and it leads to opportunities, to employment opportunities of, you know, high skill jobs, not just a job, but actually a high skill job, which is, of course, what we all want to achieve. In Italy, there's two problems. One is that the whole public education system has been completely defunded. So there's a problem of financing. Since the economic crisis of 2008, but before 2008, we had a number of governments that basically didn't prioritize education. And we have a, you know, 90 99.8% of our school system is a public school system. So the private component of our school system is super minor. And it's been defunded for not just 5 years or 10 years, but now for 30 years. So, and the way the funding, the school funding is allocated is also extremely unequal. So the more vulnerable, underserved schools end up getting actually less funding, less teachers, less resources. And so this really creates complete inequality in the system itself. And just to show you, just to tell you one thing, I mean, Italy wasn't like this. Actually, the Italian education system was an extreme example, like a best practice, global best practice, up until the 1990s. If you think of the past of Italy, very recently, after the Second World War, we were still a country, an illiterate country. The majority of Italians couldn't read or write. My grandparents couldn't read or write. We were a farming country, a very much a farming, you know, rural type of country. And in one generation, we had the economic boom that led to the modern Italy we know today. And in one generation, you know, from my grandparents to my parents, everybody moved to the cities, everybody was able to read and write, and everybody was able to integrate into the global economy. And this is one of the key factors that led to the economic boom of the 1980s in Italy. And that was thanks to a really strong public education system that essentially completely transformed the country in one generation. That stopped in the 1990s. And slowly, through less funding, less teachers, in Italy right now, there's 220,000 empty teaching spots nationally. So because the government has not hired enough teachers, that means that kids start, you know, school in September, but often they don't get a teacher until November in the classroom. So there's massive issues in terms of continuation of, you know, learning, and also those teachers change the next year. You're not guaranteed to have the same teacher for the whole of your high school experience or middle school experience. Finally, in terms of what you were saying, one of the biggest problems is actually a structural problem. Since you're interested in reform, we have a very unequal system simply because our system pushes young people to make really important choices in the first or second year of middle school. So when Italian kids are 11 or 12, they basically make decisions that will then impact in terms of which type of high school they'll choose. That will determine whether they go to university or not, or what type of life they basically end up living, what type of income they'll have for the rest of their lives. And it's a little bit too early for young people to choose that. I mean, in Germany, they choose a 14, 15, but also there's no orientation, there's no support from the system to make sure that you choose the right path for you. So that leads to the situation I described. If you come from a family that values education and will help you make the right choice, you will do. If you don't, you often get left behind.
I think it's interesting. It's also, you know, we use the term values education a lot, and I always hesitate to use the term, actually, because I think that some of it is also understanding. You know, education has its own language and literacy, and if you haven't experienced it, sometimes it's hard to help your child navigate that. You know, I think there are plenty of families out there who probably understand and appreciate the value of education and what it means to change a child's life. But if you say to parents of an 11-year-old who have an experienced education system, help your child make this life-altering decision, I hesitate to think that they would have the tools to do that. You know, I think that that's one of the things that has defined the Italian-American experience so much, actually, is our growing familiarity with education, because we always talk about our community as a people who, quote unquote, have valued education. But if you actually go back and look at the statistics in the late 60s, early 70s, Italian Americans were far undereducated and far less likely to pursue secondary education, not because they didn't value it, but because they really hadn't learned the system yet. And it's an interesting change. You talk about a one generation change. It's really the same kind of period, even later in our experience as Italian Americans, that we have become an educated community and one that has understood how to navigate the system better. From that perspective, Nick, I want to talk to you for a second about your role here, because we were talking off mic before. You've just arrived from Scotland. Your real life, as we said, is spent fighting climate change, which is an amazing dedication. But here you are as a board member for the Friends of Teach for Italy, which is an American organization. First and foremost, what is the makeup of the Friends of Teach for Italy and its role here in the U.S.? And how did you, as an Italian-American, get involved and decide to take on this mission?
Yeah, and I'll actually flip those because I think it tells an interesting story. So I probably 7 or 8 years ago, went for the first time to visit the town that my great-grandfather was born in.
Which is?
Teano.
Oh, sure.
About halfway between Rome and Naples. And I had a moment. It was the first time that, as far as anyone in my family knows, anyone has gone back since he left. And I had this realization walking around this town, meeting people who were my age, presumably in some way relatives, who had no jobs, very little prospects of leaving this town unless, like Andrea said, they were one of the few who was going to go to university and moving on. And I saw right in front of me what life could have been like if my great-grandfather didn't make the decision to leave and come to the United States, or in recent decades, what other Italians have done is leave their small towns and move to the cities to pursue opportunity. And so I decided at that point to get more educated and more involved in what was actually happening in Italy today. You know this very well. You grow up in an Italian-American family in the United States. The folklore, the traditions, the stories, the language, the food in many cases is all a derivative of a fork in the road that happened 100 years ago.
Certainly.
And so my cousins, my brothers and sisters, my extended family have very little conception of what Italy today is like.
Sure.
And that was true for me too, about 10 years ago. And I decided to make a very conscious effort of trying to learn, okay, what is this country that I am told so much about from my family actually like? And it's not just taking a gondola ride in Venice or riding a horse and carriage around Rome. And so for me, like Andrea was saying, what becomes crystal clear is that education, as it is in any developing or developed country, is the key to the future prosperity of the country. And it's very clear. And I just got back from a visit to Torino with Andrea to some schools that there's a big problem. And you talk about Italy, it's, you know, still part of the G7, one of the seven biggest economies in the world. And yet it has huge problems, which means it has huge opportunities. So if you can fix some of these inequities in education and provide a greater amount of opportunity to these kids, just think about what the country could become in the next few decades. That takes leadership at every level, and in particular, at the level that Andrea is doing, to really push reform and change and opportunity inside of the system. And so when I met Andrea a few years ago and he was telling me about the work he was doing, I knew this is something I wanted to immediately plug into, and knew that so many people that I know on this side of the Atlantic would be interested in. I think, and this is part of what we're thinking about at Friends of Teach for Italy, is there are a lot of Italian Americans who do now want to really reconnect with the country as it is, and not the image of it that has been passed down. And so we see a huge opportunity for people who feel the same sense of obligation to give something back to a place that, had circumstances been different, we'd still be in and do something for. So we formed Friends of Teach for Italy over the course of a few conversations during the pandemic. There's four of us on the board with Andrea's leadership who are working through, okay, now we have to get the Italian American community engaged in this work of fixing the Italian education system. And like I said, for me, it comes from a place of, it could be me who is one of these kids who don't have opportunity for no reason other than the leadership isn't there. And so we're looking forward to the next few years where we build out membership, where we bring in people of a like mindset who want to get involved in these issues, who want to frankly contribute financially to support the mission of Teach for Italy, but who also really want to get engaged with Italy as it is today. We're planning all kinds of ways to stay engaged, including annual visits to Italy, to the schools, to meet the fellows. And I'll let Andrea talk more about the actual program and how it works. But there are some amazing young people who actually have just had the opportunity to meet in person for the first time a few weeks ago, who just radiate a sense of optimism and ambition for their country and the students that they're working with, that is really impressive. So I'm excited for more people in the Italian American community to get to know Teach for Italy, to get to know the work that they're doing, and the incredible opportunity I think that we'll have in the next few years to engage hundreds and thousands of people in this work.
So as an Italian American, I think a big issue is that a lot of Italian Americans don't understand the educational standards that Italians face. Because, I mean, I know this might sound silly to you guys, but when I was young and I would visit Italy and I would talk to my cousins and, you know, they were going through the interrogation process or studying for exams, it is quite rigorous, is it not?
Yes, it is very rigorous.
So could you maybe talk a little bit about what that's like and how different it is from the American education standards? Because actually graduating high school and or university is a little bit difficult. So I think that sometimes can contribute to why a lot of people start degrees and do not finish them, or why they don't even attempt at all.
Yes, I think that's a great question. I mean, it's it is very rigorous, and it is basically, it is part of the fact that it is a very difficult education system, and that, you know, we do more testing, we do more exams of any type compared to the American system. We also study for a couple of more years. You know, overall, our students study for two years longer overall than American kids. But I think the biggest problem is that type of the hardship, let's say, of a very difficult education system is more for that 40-45% of kids who actually end up in the right school and in the right journey, educational journey. And so the problem for them is definitely that, you know, it's harder to finish the education system. It's harder to finish, you know, university, because it is a tough journey. But if it's the right journey for you, I think most people will make it. The reason why people don't make it is because they choose the wrong journey and they actually drop out too early. So there's like between 40 and 45% of Italians who still get a really great education system, you know, who are very well prepared for the world, and sometimes even better than Americans, in the sense that when you get out of high school, if you've done a proper high school, so a liceo, you're generally more well prepared in general culture compared to American students. So we study a lot more history, a lot more history of art, a lot more philosophy and Latin and all the stuff. That there's many more subjects that every single student has to study. Doesn't matter the minor or the major that basically you choose. Therefore, this prepares you. You're generally a little bit more cultured in general culture compared to students from other countries. The problem is that the moment you actually try to get to work on the skills and the competencies that are needed in today's world, those are lacking in the Italian education system. And that is also true for those 45% of kids who actually are lucky enough to go to good schools. Then there's the reality of the 55% who actually don't get, the story is completely different. They, as I said, you know, they lack teachers. We lack basic stuff. They lack teachers. We have schools building that are literally falling apart. And that's a national emergency, in the sense that, you know, it rains in your classroom, the heating doesn't work. We have really, really basic problems that we're still needing to fix. And we have programs, curriculum that are so outdated and so completely detached from what the world looks like today. And that's the biggest problem, that we're not working on the mindset, on the competencies and the skills that will be necessary for the next generation of young people, young Italians to succeed. I mean, John, you just mentioned the work that Nick does on climate change. He was just at COP26 in Glasgow. I mean, as Teach for Italy, but generally at Teach for All, what we believe is that we're not going to be able to achieve any progress on any of the global challenges we face. Climate change is one of them, maybe the most important one of them, because, you know, the priority should be to save the planet and kind of survive as a humanity. We're not going to be able to do that if we don't start by activating and working on a different type of mindset that is a sustainable mindset with the young people of today. Because the young people of today have to act differently from my generation and from especially the baby boomers generation. And we can only achieve that change in school. And so that's what's not happening in Italy. In Italy, you study, you get out of high school and you can absolutely recite, you know, the Promessi Sposi or your poem in Latin, but there is no work in, okay, what is your role as a young person, as an 18-year-old in fixing the problems of today? Do you have critical thinking? Can you understand what's a real news versus fake news? All of that is missing, and I think that's what we need to work on.
So I just want to go over for our listeners out here, because I really think it's important that they understand the distinction in how students are evaluated in the Italian education system. Because in America, you go to university, and in one semester, you would have a midterm exam in the middle of the semester, and you have a final exam, and that continues for the 4 years that you're doing your undergraduate degree. In Italy, can you just explain how it works so people have a good picture of how this system operates?
Yes, of course. So starting before university, so the system is based on 5 years of primary school, 3 years of middle school, and then 5 years of high school. And then those who get to university, there's two different types of degrees. There's a three-year degree, which is called, you know, in your world, it would be an undergraduate degree. And then there's a full degree, or laurea magistrale, which is a five-year degree, which would be equivalent to like a degree plus a master's in the US. The reality is that without that full degree or the laurea magistrale, without the 5 years, you're not really considered to have graduated. So, but a lot of kids drop out after the 3 years, and they don't continue to the final 5 years. In terms of specifically in university, it's very different in the sense that courses or units are much longer in Italy, so they last the whole year. And also there's not just, you know, a midterm and a final. There's a number of different tests and a number of different, you know, exams that you do across different subjects. It's a more fluid and more complicated process. It's less structured. And also you study more subjects compared to the American system.
And there are many more oral exams than we have here. And in reality, that five-year degree, how many people actually finish it in 5 years? What is the percentage of people that take 5 years to finish it, as opposed to people who take much, much longer to finish it?
Yes, that's a key difference between America and Italy, is that while in America you have to graduate within a specific time frame, in Italy you can basically, you don't have a specific deadline. You know, you can just, you decide when to take the exam. So once you finish your course, you can take your final whenever you want. They offer finals at specific times, you know, across every year, and you can decide. And if you don't want to take it this year, you'll take it next year, and you move on and move on and move on. So there's a high percentage of students who actually never graduate because they drop out, or rather than take 5 years, they take 7 or 8 years. What we work though on Teach for Italy is, I mean, that's a real problem for the university system for sure. Our problem is what we call the right of opportunity. So if we could get more kids to that problem, we would have solved already a big issue, in the sense that we want to make sure Italy has the lowest percentage of not only graduates in Europe, so people who actually graduate. And I think what you're referring to is definitely a problem, because a lot of people get lost in the 5 years of university. But what worries us is that we have the lowest percentage of people who actually sign up to university. And so that's the key that we want to work on.
So the other thing that you mentioned, Andrea, about the conditions for educational buildings in Italy, you know, I've had a firsthand account of this. One time I actually did accompany one of my cousins to school in Bari, and I just like waited outside, but this building was falling apart. Now, this is a major city, albeit in the south, but the problem is real, that it does rain inside your classroom, even in a major city. The teachers have been in their positions for sometimes 20, 30, 40 years. You have these 90-year-old maestre, professori that, you know, are very out of touch. Because one thing I think we should talk about is that it's very hard to get fired from a position like that in Italy. Once you have, you know, gone through the process of going to liceo, then university, then you're a laureato, then you get a position from a raccomandazione, it's pretty hard to get out of that, is it not?
Yes, absolutely. That's one of the biggest challenges we have. Not only because, of course, as I said, the Italian government hasn't hired enough teachers because of austerity measures and general cuts on education for almost 20 years. So we're lacking this new blood into the system. There's not enough new blood coming into the system. The old blood into the system came into, another thing I'd like to underline is that they all came into their classrooms when Italy was a very different country 30 years ago. So their classroom all looked like me, you know, white kids with, you know, dark hair. And now their classrooms look very different. So the Italian education system is also absolutely unprepared for the diversity that already exists in Italian society. It is completely unprepared for Muslim kids and Muslim students. It is completely unprepared for Italian, African kids or, Italians of first or second generation, of many different cultures that now exist in Italy. And as a country of emigration, since we're talking to the Italian American community, we're really well used to de-emigration. We're not as used to immigration yet in our society. And I think that's a key thing that the education system needs to work on. And finally, while you were mentioning the bureaucratic part, yes, the moment you get your tenured teaching spot, it's basically impossible to fire you. So even if you're a terrible teacher, even if you're doing, actively doing damage in the classroom, it's really hard to fire you. So what we're trying to work with as Teach for Lily, and Teach for America is a leader in this, is not only bring new blood into the classroom and into the system, but make sure that our fellows can be a seed of change, not only in those 2 years when they actually teach in those schools and in those classrooms, and can influence the school to be managed in a different way, beyond the work that they do in every day in the classroom. And you can imagine it's very innovative, it's student-centered, and it's a complete revolution compared to what your standard Italian teacher does with its students. But what we want to do is that in the medium to long term, our fellows will remain in the system to make sure that they can change the system from the inside, so that they will become the new principals of these schools, able to raise money for the school, able to make sure that the funding that they receive is better managed, so that it's unacceptable that it rains in the classroom in 2021. And also they will go higher up and end up working in the Ministry of Education one day to try and change educational policy, to try and innovate and modernize the curricula that are so outdated in Italy right now. So ours is really an investment in the long-term change and innovation of the Italian education system.
This November, we're thankful for family, friends, and our connection to Italy. Come together as a family this season and enjoy the variety of top-notch entertainment and news programming Mediaset Italia has to offer, including new limited drama series Luce dei Tuoi Occhi, about a mother on a quest to learn the truth about her daughter, reality series Amici and Grande Fratello V, whose twists and turns will keep you glued to your TVs all winter, plus hard-hitting and thought-provoking news and magazine programs covering both Italian and world issues. Call your local television provider and ask for Mediaset Italia, and add some Italian-American flair to your feed on Instagram by following us at Mediaset Italia USA.
So you're talking about a lot of things, right? You're talking about pedagogy and the ideas and philosophies around education. We're talking about human resource management and these fellows, which I want to talk about a little bit further. You're talking about infrastructure and investment and real crisis of economics in terms of investing in new teachers, investing in the buildings and things. So I want to kind of cover those three things as we go forward. But the first question around any of that, I guess, is around the fellows, because the whole mission of Teach for Italy and the support that comes from friends of Teach for Italy is to put young, dynamic thought leaders into Italian classrooms. So those who have graduated from the university system are committing to spend at least 2 years teaching in underprivileged schools throughout Italy. How do you identify those students, select those fellows? How are they compensated and prepared for the experience? And what have you guys found is the retention rate for those fellows after their 2 years in this experience?
Sure. First of all, I should say we're very young. We're just at the second group of fellows. We launched in late 2019, early 2020, and you all know what happened in February 2020 to Italy. So, which is another story to tell, like the resilience that the organization has shown in launching in basically the biggest pandemic and the biggest emergency in terms of the education system globally. But we're now at our second cohort of fellows. So we have a history of 2 years in the classroom. How do we select them? So we do, and we recruit them. So we start a recruitment campaign now. So every year we recruit between November and May, and we do our national recruitment campaign. We do it on social media, we do it online, but we also do it with, COVID permitting, with a trade show that we take to every single Italian university. We start from 20 best Italian universities, but we are present, this year we will be present in 60 Italian universities, where we do events and we try to promote the fellowship as an opportunity for future graduates. And then we have partnerships in the corporate sector. For example, Boston Consulting Group is one of them, but also really big Italian corporate leaders in every sector. Fiat Chrysler, the biggest company, is one of our partners, and it helps us in promoting the fellowship in its world of stakeholders and partners as well. So we also try to get the corporate sector to help us promote the fellowship. The moment people apply, it's very difficult to get in. It's very difficult to get in for Teach for America. So it takes more or less from the moment you apply to the moment you will know if you're selected or not, it takes more or less 4 months. It's 7 different steps where we go and evaluate 11 different competencies. And the thing that I'm proudest of is that we read the resume on the 7th step. So we ask for your resume at the very end. So first we want to see what you can do, what you're able to do, but also what kind of vision of change you have for the country and how you're going to achieve that. So we work a lot on leadership because this is a leadership development program, as Nick was saying, and having talked and met the fellows at the end of the day, these are young leaders who want to see a change in Italy and they want to do it through the classroom. And then how do we support them? So we start from a 6-week training, summer school training, where we start to teach them how to teach. So we give them the basic resources and tools to become what we call a transformational teacher. So not just a teacher, but somebody who can really have a transformational impact on their students and that classroom. And all of that, all of the work that we do in training and the resources that we give them, it's based on 30 years of experience from Teach for America, but also the other 60 countries I mentioned before. Now, this model, the Teach for, is present in 61 countries, and we're one of the youngest to be born. So we have a lot of experience from other countries that works. For example, Teach for India has an amazing, amazing program. And so part of their work is called the Love Revolution. And we took a little bit of that in terms of working with on the emotional intelligence and emotional competencies of kids early on, for example, starting from primary school. So we've had the luxury to take the best practices from a number of countries and contextualize them to the Italian model. We're lucky for another reason, because Italy, yes, it is living through an educational crisis, but it also has some great examples of pedagogy and teaching practices. I mean, Montessori, the system of Montessori schools, is an Italian best practice.
Sure.
The Reggio Children model is an Italian best practice. And I was surprised when I started working with friends of Teach for Italy and Nick and the board, wherever you go in America, whether it's LA or New York or, Chicago, you will find a Montessori school, you will find a Reggio school.
Yeah.
They're usually the most difficult schools to get in, the most exclusive school, the most expensive schools. And yet the Italian education system doesn't use those methods at all. It's like they don't exist for Italian kids. And so we're trying to basically also say, okay, we can take international best practices, but we also have some good best practices that are made in Italy, who we should probably start, developing further and using in the public school system. And then to end, basically they get followed and supported for the 2 years of the program. So they have a tutor that visits them in schools. We do 3 visits, schools visits a year. We try to see how they're doing. We give them feedback. And we work with the entire school community, so the principal and the other teachers in the school, to support our fellows to make sure that they can, succeed. And we have, 2 years of trainings, even too much. I mean, the program is a hard program to do. I mean, just like in Teach for America, I mean, it breaks you. And we tell this to the fellows. I mean, it's not a walk in the park, because if we want to change the education system in Italy and fight inequality, we got to find people who have the stamina and the resilience to do it.
Wow, that's very well said. That's very interesting. It reminds me, I'm on the board for the U.S. Fulbright Commission, and it reminds me a bit of the process. This is a very coveted prize, and it should be, because I think Nick used the right idea. You're creating leaders, not just educators, and there's a natural overlap that needs to exist in order for reform to take root. So that, I think that's really an important part of what's going on here.
And there's another aspect to exactly what you just said I want to highlight, which is, we hope that a lot of these fellows are going to go into education in Italy, whether as teachers or as administrators into the ministry, but not all of them will. And something Andrea said early on here, even Andrea, who is incredibly, obviously an incredibly talented smart young Italian had to go abroad to find opportunity. And in a lot of cases, these fellows are coming back to Italy from jobs that they've gotten in London or Germany, where many of the most talented Italians go to. And so the Italian economy is deprived of these skills, the talent, the vision that the brightest young people have. And so another aspect to the fellowship program is getting the most talented kids in Italy invested in Italy's development, whether it's through the education system or if they go on to some other part of the public sector or the private sector, and are engaged very closely with the development of the country. And so by giving them this leadership opportunity early on in their careers, they then become invested in bringing the Italian economy to the next level in all aspects.
Let's talk a little bit about the Italian economy, actually, because, you know, it's appropriate, right? We're sitting at a deep point here in this COVID crisis and what it's meant for the economies all over the world. Obviously, Italy hit incredibly hard and early and deprived of tourism income and revenue, which is a major source of its economy. But Italy is also looking at a very different country post-COVID, if we can feel comfortable using the term post-COVID, right? You're talking about a technocratic government led by one of the world's most celebrated and appreciated economists in Mario Draghi. You're talking about, I think it's about $200 billion in European recovery and resilience funding, right? That's coming Italy's way. I believe that's a number. Don't quote me on that. But there's a renewed kind of enthusiasm, and you're talking about a country where, for the first time, people are paying their electric bill online and understanding that you don't have to necessarily in 2021 flee the little paese in the middle of the mountains to go to the city for opportunity. You can bring opportunity to you, and non-governmental organizations and the government itself can play a role in that. What does this renewed enthusiasm mean, and what is this opportunity for renewed investment? Because these funds have to be spent, right? This is important. So is there a movement within the country that either of you is seeing right now to focus on education when it comes to that European recovery funding?
Well, the enthusiasm is real. I just spent a couple of months in Rome. And for all the previous times I've been to Italy, there is a palpable optimism among people. And it's a combination, I think, of coming out of COVID, of Draghi's leadership and the respect for him, the money coming in from the European Union. And Andrea, you can disagree with me, but there's a sense among people that things are going in the right direction for the first time in a very long time.
For sure, I totally agree. And there's more than anything, there's a sense that this is our last chance. If we don't get on this train and if we don't spend those 240 billion euros that are coming from the European Union and we spend them in the right priorities. And of course, we believe that education is one of those right priorities to unlock the potential of the country. I don't know that there's going to be, you know, many more of these opportunities. I mean, in nominal terms, the money that we'll be receiving in the next 4 years is bigger than what the Marshall Plan was after the Second World War. So it is a huge opportunity to really redesign the country. And to your point, John, yes, there is more attention to education. And so part of that funding will go to education. And that's mostly because COVID, with all the really terrible impact that it had on education. Italy was the first country in the West to close schools, and it was the last country in the West to reopen them, sending a terrible signal to society that basically we could reopen anything. Any other sector of the economy was more important than schools. And so that government is gone. We now have a new leadership that actually, one of the first things that Mario Draghi said was that the school system, this was early in the summer, the school system had to open on time with all the teachers in the classrooms in September, and it did. So we're seeing a renewed investment and attention, at least to education system, mostly because we had 8 million parents absolutely angry at the school system during the pandemic because the school system was unable to keep their kids learning, and they want more. They know that their kids deserve more. The problem is always this. I mean, is this pressure going to stay there? I always say this. I think if I ask you, John, you just had a baby, or Nick, or anybody else who has kids, you know, what would you do to make sure that your kid will have the best possible education? You would go through any length to make sure that would happen. It's like probably top three priorities in anybody's mind to make sure their kids have a good education. Yet when you go to the ballot box, nobody votes on education. Nobody cares about education. And so there's a complete disconnect between, you know, what we care, what we think is important in our personal lives, and what actually then we act upon and we vote on later on. And so this happens globally, of course, not just in Italy. It was particularly evident in Italy. I think COVID may give us this, and this time now may represent this opportunity where actually education is at the center of people's mind and is at the center of the government's action. So as Teach for Italy, we want to be part of that conversation. I think we see that excitement you're saying, but we're also worried that this being Italy, some of that money will not be spent well. Some of the money will not be focused on the issues that the country needs the most. So we are actually part of the conversation, and that's why this is an exciting time for Teach for Italy to grow and to have an impact on the Italian system.
I think that having had a year or two in some cases where people with kids were in their classroom, essentially, right? If they were learning virtually or if they were not receiving the education at some point in this whole crisis, I do think it makes a different awareness here in the United States, in Italy, and in every country. Because, you know, education, unfortunately, even though all of us have gone through it, right? If you examine your kids or kids in your family, or if you're involved in education, we tend to reminisce about what our experience was through rose-colored lenses always, and then sort of forget that, like everything else, this is an evolving industry and methodologies evolve and curriculums evolve. And so it's been an interesting opportunity to see what is going on, even in a remote sense, for people. And I do think people are much more aware of the shortcomings globally around education systems in different countries. Obviously, we just saw an election in Virginia for the governorship where education, for better or worse, became a big part of that election. And it speaks to the American ideas of states' rights and things like that, right, where the curriculum was set. Can we just talk a moment about Italy? Because one of the things we talk about a lot on this show is the North-South question in Italy. 87% of Italian Americans have roots from the southern regions of Italy. Obviously, that's a huge diaspora of Southern Italians here and in Canada and Australia, places like that. So our show tends to look at the regional situation with a very dedicated eye. Can we talk about where these decisions are being made? Because, you know, for the uninitiated, obviously Italy has its national government out of Rome, then it has regional governments, then it has provincial governments, then the comune underneath it. Where are these decisions made about resource allocation, about curriculum? What's the Italian system look like versus the American system?
Yes, and that is a key question because the decisions are made too centrally. Everything is decided in Rome. There's zero decentralization. And that creates, in a system that is very slow and very bureaucratic, that creates a situation where things don't move. And that's one of the main reasons why the system is still so, you know, outdated and hasn't changed over the years. I'll give you an example. We're going into the nitty-gritty here. It might be a bit boring, but I mean, the reason why, you know, kids start school in September without teachers, and some of the teachers actually show up in the classroom in November, is that, you know, every single teacher allocation nationally from Milan to Palermo is decided centrally in Rome. So, how many teachers every single school should have, how many, you know, how much budget every single school should have, and everything is decided centrally. And that is absolutely crazy. Over the last 20 years, there've been attempts at reform and a slight decentralization. Now, the Ministry of Education has regional offices. So in each of the 21 regions of Italy, there is a regional office of the ministry that should lead on, you know, the education for that region. So in Lombardy, Piemonte, or, you know, Campania, or wherever that may be, the reality is that these offices don't have a budget, and that the budget, since you were talking about the North-South divide, the budget is also centrally allocated. And so that means, actually, the funny thing is that most people would think, oh, that means that's why the South is so underserved and underfunded. In reality, when it's about education, the big loser here is the North of Italy. So of the 220,000 teachers missing in the system, around 170,000 are missing from Rome north, not from Rome south. Because, you know, I'll give you the example of Lombardy. Lombardy alone has more citizens than most, you know, all the regions in the south put together, and has more schools and more kids, and therefore it needs more teachers and more money to run those schools. but Lombardy gets more or less the same amount of money that the region in the south gets, because the money is centrally allocated. So if it was decentralized, the reason why they didn't decentralize it, because if they completely decentralized the system, it would be more like a federal system like in the US. Of course, Lombardy or Piemonte or Veneto, like the northern regions, if they could put their own money into education, they would have a much better school system. They have much more money. They're much more wealthy. And so the problem, like the fear of the government has always been, yes, if we decentralize it, maybe that will improve the situation in some regions, but it will really kind of accentuate the division between North and South, because the resources gap will then become huge. I think there's a way that you can actually reform it in a way that you take into account this type of inequities. The reality is that the system right now, decentralized, where, you know, the office in Rome decides every single thing that happens nationally, is clearly unsustainable.
Reminds me of one of my all-time favorite Italian movies, which is in English, goes by the title Ciao Professore by Lena Wertmüller. It's a 1980s movie where, due to some mix-up in the Ministry of Education, a teacher from Liguria who thinks he's being relocated to, I think the town is Corsano in Liguria, but he ends up in Corzano in Campania, and it's a whole mix-up about his, you know, introduction to this other part of the country. But frankly, that kind of centralization is fitting for the screenplay of a comedy, right? I mean, that kind of centralization, you can see where the pitfalls are going to lie on that route to educational reform. So it'd be interesting to see how these new regional educational offices are integrated, particularly with this kind of funding. Obviously, there's a huge need. We have used the word crisis, and I think appropriately so. I want to ask Nick before we go, with an organization like the Friends of Teach for Italy, it doesn't sound like we're at the point yet where Italian Americans can actually go participate as educators in Italy. Am I correct? That's not in the cards here.
No, that's not in the cards here. But what we do want is for Italian Americans to participate in this process,
right,
and to become more educated, to become engaged. And, you know, and this is where I'll make my pitch. If you found this conversation interesting, we want to have you as part of the network here. And it's, you know, we are definitely looking for folks to donate to the cause, but we also want to create a community of people who are engaged in this issue. And we want to continue to educate people on issues of education, on issues of modern Italy and its economy and all these things, and build a community around Friends of Teach for Italy, where it's more than just, okay, I'm writing my check at the end of the year to whatever charity I've decided to support, but you really become part of the mission. And you get to go and meet some of the fellows and watch them teach and meet the kids who are being impacted and see the schools. And hopefully over the course of the years to come, see the schools get better as a result of this work. So we're excited. Our website is friendsofteachforitaly.org. So go take a look, sign up. You want to get involved. We're happy to have a conversation and bring people into the fold. And we're really excited. We're really excited about the work that Andrea is doing. You know, he mentioned a minute ago about the fact that, you know, the first class of fellows came in during the pandemic. And what I say to anyone I'm talking to Teach for Italy about is, if an organization can get off the ground in the middle of a pandemic, forget about the middle, at the beginning of the pandemic, when everything was closed and no one had any clue what the next day was going to be like, it can do anything. And that's why I have so much confidence that this organization is going to make a real difference. So I invite anyone listening to become a part of that.
Well, I certainly hope our audience does. And because I think it's important that Italian Americans can have opportunities to engage modern Italy and be impactful and be contributors in such an important sector of growth and really the future of this motherland of ours. So, you know, if this organization has been able to do this from the very start of the pandemic, Andrea, I'm assuming you've got very high hopes for the future of this great cause, this great mission, and this great NGO. Where do you see Teach for Italy in 5 years, 10 years? What's the hope?
Well, I see us grow. I mean, we already have a 3-year plan where by the end of these 3 years, we want to be every year in 200 new schools, you know, annually. And that's the first thing, is to be in as many disadvantaged schools as possible and become a national organization. Right now, our fellows are placed from Rome North. We next year will start going south. And so we want to become a national organization and be present in all 21 regions of the country. And we will do that in the next 3 years. But most importantly, I want to grow the organization to the point where it has to be noticed by the system. At this time, we just said about what an opportunity this time we're living in is. I want to be able for Teach Freely, for our fellows, for our alums, when we'll have the first alums coming out of this program, to be engaged in the conversations about the reform of the Italian education system, about funding the Italian education system, about how to allocate the European Union funding that we'll be receiving over the next few years. We want to be part of a systemic change in the Italian education system, and that's what investing in Teach Freely means.
Well, I certainly think it's an amazing and worthwhile cause, and I hope our audience will go out and learn more and learn about how they can participate. Ro, if there is ever a day where Italian Americans can come from overseas and be fellows in this wonderful project, maybe you and I should sign up and go through the process, see if we can't go teach a couple of years in Italy.
Oh, I think we'd be great. I think it'd have to have an accompanying reality show just so people believe us.
Yeah, the Italian American Academy. We got to pick the right team. Maybe Mole is the right place for it.
Well, you should apply to Teach Freely. We would have you.
Hopefully it's a blind process then.
Pat would have to come too. Absolutely. 100%. We're a trifecta.
If Pat made it to the Fellowship of Teach for Italy, by the end of the first year, he would be the Minister for Education. They would be just absolutely loving every moment of having him. It's too bad he wasn't on today's show, because it would be a lot of fun to get his take on this, I'm sure. And you know how much he focuses on education, which is obviously a big issue for all of us. So really glad we got to participate in this conversation. Andrea, thank you for the good work. Thank you for coming on, both of you guys. And if you're out there in the audience and you want to get involved, make sure to reach out. And hopefully you can play a little part in a lot of hope for this country that we call our motherland and we love very, very much. So from all of us at the Italian American Podcast, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. I feel like one of us should do the Pat Rye exit. Pretty good.